This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. The publishing industry stayed afloat this year by designing and selling books for e-readers. Those devices jumped from novelty items to mainstream use. Brick-and-mortar booksellers had a rougher time. The biblio-behemoth Borders closed stores across the country. Amazon encouraged thrifty shoppers to scan barcodes in the bookstore and order cheaper online. Closer to home, River Run Books in Portsmouth nearly closed its doors, but was saved by a swarm of locavesters. But the independent bookstore remains one place where unsung gems can still shine. We're ticking through some of the year's books that didn't have the big names nor the big promotional budgets to move them. Michelle Philgate is with us on the line. She's writer and critic and events coordinator at McNally Jackson Books in New York City. Michelle, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Jody Poloni is here with us in the studio. She's a writer who lives in Marlboro, Vermont, and works at Everyone's Books in Brattleboro. Jody, great to have you here.
Thanks. So happy to be here.
Jason Bogue is also with us on the line, blogger and editor of the publishing website Gallycat. So glad you're all here with us today. Hi, Jason.
Hi, good to be here.
Well, you're going to stand in for the industry watcher today. Can you take a stab at summing up the year for books? Good, bad, neutral?
It was a pretty turbulent year, actually. And I think the biggest problem came from Borders closing. I think we're going to see the repercussions of that for the next few years as publishers struggle with all this lost shelf space.
A couple of novels on your list. Was it a good year for novels, Jason?
Oh, it was a great year for novels. We had some big-name novelists like Colson Whitehead, Ann Patchett, Haruki Murakami coming out with things. But my top overlooked novel was Pym by Matt Johnson.
That's P-Y-M for readers.
Yes, and it's the story of an unemployed English professor who goes to Antarctica to chase down characters mentioned in this obscure Edgar Allan Poe story. And you can actually read online a free ebook copy of this Edgar Allan Poe story and kind of really get into the book. And it made me laugh out loud many, many times.
Yeah, that's good to hear. It's good to laugh at a novel. Michelle, however, you put a novel that made you sob on your list, Say Her Name by Francisco Goldman. What was that about?
Yes, that's a novel that's based on a true story, which is what makes it so sad. Francisco was very much in love with his younger wife, who was also a writer, and they were on vacation in Mexico, and she died in a tragic body surfing accident. So this book is an ode to her fiery young spirit, and it's really one of the best love stories I've ever read, but it's also heartbreaking.
So as
I think that...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. No, I was just going to say that I think that many people will find a lot to like in this book.
So, all right, so we laughed, we cried, and now Jody's going to throw us a curveball. Jody, you're cheering this year for short stories in the fiction genre. What's the draw for you?
Yeah, when I think about short story collections, that's when I think about overlooked and undersold. And I brought a couple. Volt by Alan Heathcock. I read this book once, and then I read it again. It's very powerful. The prose is stunning. It's poetic. And yet, he's getting a lot of accolades and acclaims for this book. And so it's cheating a little bit to say that it's overlooked. But for a short story collection, it still flies under the radar screen that most novels.
Mm-hmm. You don't see him in the front of the store, certainly.
I don't even see him in the stores, and yet he's on 10 or 12 best pick lists of the year.
What else have you got there?
And then by Siobhan Fallon, You Know When the Men Are Gone. Both of these collections are linked stories, so you'll see reoccurring places, characters, and themes, which can give a novel reader a sense of a novel-like experience when reading short stories.
Any of you have something to add to the short story genre? Michelle?
Oh, yes, I do. Widow by Michelle Latiolis, which was published by Bellevue Literary Press. I've talked about that press on this show before. They're the same publisher of Tinkers, which won the Pulitzer Prize. And they just consistently are publishing quality fiction. Now, Widow, I'm also cheating by listing this book because it did get a front page New York Times book review, but I still feel like the book has slipped under the radar and not as many people know about it. It's also a linked collection of short stories, and it comes out of the writer losing her spouse. So I've noticed that I'm reading a lot of books about people dying lately. I'm not sure what that says about me.
Well, all right, Michelle, I know cheating is overextending the list as well, and we're very good at that. But say I've got a week to read. Can you pick one or two novels that should not be missed?
Yes. I think that you should definitely read Allie Smith's latest novel. That book is an incredible novel that's about essentially a dinner guest big goat who's at a dinner party, doesn't know anyone there, and ends up locking himself up in an upstairs room. It's an incredible book, and that's called There But For The. The book is very much about wordplay. She is really into playing with words as much as possible, and that's for people who don't just like a good plot, but also really fascinating writing. I would go with that book.
How about you, Jason? Another novel to recommend?
Yeah, I have to add Curfew by Jesse Ball. It's a heartbreaking story set in a kind of magical world where a tombstone engraver who lives under an authoritarian regime is trying to keep his daughter safe, and he gets embroiled in kind of a strange evening plot. It's very suspenseful, and I became a father last year, and just watching this little girl in the story, it breaks your heart.
Well, we're talking about overlooked books of the season, of the year, actually, with Michelle Philgate from McNally Jackson Books in New York. Jody Poloni is with us from Everyone's Books in Brattleboro, and Jason Bogue, we just heard of. He's blogger and editor of Galley Cat. And we will have their full list online at wordofmouthradio.org. All right, how about nonfiction, Jody? Let's start with you.
Okay, I brought World Enough in Time by Christian McEwen.
We actually interviewed her.
Yes, she is fairly local. She lives in the Five College area of Massachusetts. She's a Scottish poet and teacher. And this book is about slowing down. And I think of it as a spiritual textbook. And I use the word textbook in the best sense, in that it's just full of resources and facts that really uphold her principles. And I have a favorite quote from this book that I just want to share because
I think it really describes
the book perfectly. And the quote is by Diane Ackerman, and it's, "Slow down, our sages advise, slow down all the way to the pace of stone and shadow." And this is the quintessential New Year's resolution book.
Okay, well, we're not going to be able to slow down, but I really appreciate the thought. Jason, you picked an Incognito for Nonfiction by David Eagleman. Now, this is a subject we talk about here a lot on Word of Mouth, neurology.
Yeah, the book just showed me all sorts of things that my brain is doing to mislead me and the crazy things it does on a daily basis. And I found a lot of things I could talk about at parties with this book. You can take people and show them mirrors and show them all sorts of weird tricks that their brain is playing on them. Excellent book.
All right. How about another strong year for the memoir, it looks like. Michelle, what's on your list for memoir?
The Long Goodbye by Megan O'Rourke, which is a memoir about losing her mother to cancer. Her mother died really young from cancer. And Megan O'Rourke is also a poet and critic, and that really comes through in this memoir. Her writing is poetic and gorgeous, and it's a beautiful book.
Interesting that memoirs are having another strong year, you know, as reality television and this kind of perhaps distorted version of reality keeps coming to us. The true life still has an appeal.
Yeah.
Any takers on that?
Yeah. No, but my book, Revolution, The Year I Fell in Love and Went to Join the War by Deb Olin Unferth is actually a great example of that. She kind of cuts through all of the memoir cliches to talk about her time as a very young and inexperienced and kind of reckless woman running around in El Salvador during a very dangerous period in that country's history, and her voice is impeccable, and it stuck with me all year long.
Okay, that is Revolution, The Year I Fell in Love and Went to Join the War. In the more fanciful realm, a trend that we really began to see a lot more of last year, picture books for adults. Jody, what'd you find?
Yes, I love Grandpa Green by Lane Smith, and this is marketed as a children's book, but has wide appeal. It's very multi-generational. It deals with issues of aging. The illustrations are beautiful, and they're black and white pen and ink with splashes of greens and these amazing hedge sculptures. And there's a surprise at the end of this book that I won't reveal, but it will be enough surprise for both the story lover and the visual image lover.
They look beautiful. There, you've got another one there. What is that?
Yes, and this book is The Conference of the Birds by Peter Sis. And this is a book you just want to hold in your hands for the experience of holding it. The weight of it, the paper is just really exquisite. And it's based on a Persian poet, Attar's epic poem called The Conference of the Birds, and it's Peter Sis's version
of
that.
Yeah, he's a Czech author. I heard him interviewed, I think, on All Things Considered. Mm-hmm. Michelle, you have a graphic novel on your list.
Yes, Habibi by Craig Thompson, who's the author of Blankets, which was another popular graphic novel. Habibi is a gorgeous story that is incorporates an Arabian night style story with a beautiful love story. And the word itself is an Arabic word that means my beloved. Mm-hmm. It's the story of two child slaves and what they endure over time as they grow up together. And also it's an ode to storytelling itself. It's really an incredible book.
Well, so many incredible books that we don't hear enough about. And Jason, any honorable mentions for you? I think you had a reissue here.
Yeah, I had to mention The Missing of the Somme by Jeff Dyer. It's the first time it's been out here in the United States. Fantastic book about World War I and Britain's experience of that war and the way we remember war. And I think World War II has captured a lot of our attention through movies and books in recent times, and it's really good to look back at World War I, really an earth-shaking conflict.
How about you, Michelle, the almighty young adult category? Any attempts getting even within striking distance of filling the void left by Twilight?
For young adult, I talked about this book last year, the same series essentially last year on this segment, but Rick Yancey's Monstromologist series, the third one came out this year called The Isle of Blood, and it's the best one yet. I stand by my opinion that this series is better than Harry Potter, better than The Hunger Games, which I just finished and loved. But this book is really incorporates old-fashioned storytelling, sort of a Dickensian storytelling with also horror and blood. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, Jody, it looks like you have something there that's a little bit of a survival guide from the looks of it for a cold winter's day.
Yes, it is. It's called The Farmer's Cookbook, and it's by Marie Lawrence, who's a local Vermonter. And paging through this cookbook is like taking a back road trip through the seasons of Vermont.
Oh,
through
nice.
Food. You can learn how to make marshmallows, and you can learn how to cure warts and polish silver and make cologne, as well as learn about cows and mastitis, and it's just a great homespun treat that you'll enjoy.
Yeah, take that, you city slickers. That's what we're doing up here, removing our warts. Well, you know, I mentioned at the top, after many years of many people sort of trashing Amazon but still buying books there, did Amazon finally step over the line by encouraging people to go to indie bookstores or brick-and-mortar bookstores, scan the barcodes, and get it cheaper online? Is this just too much? How about you, Jason?
I did want to clarify their app that they released recently only focuses on electronics, DVDs, and things like that. It didn't step quite into the bookstore realm in the fine print, but booksellers around the country got up in arms about that. And we've seen a rallying cry. I think people have turned this moment into a time to defend bookstores. And we've created a list of over 100 indie bookstores on Twitter, and I think we're seeing a lot of people rallying around this moment.
Well, Jason, I really want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Jason Bogue, blogger and editor of the publishing website Galley Cat. Also to you, Michelle Filgate. Great to hear your voice again.
Thanks for having me.
Michelle Filgate, writer and critic. She's also events coordinator at McNally Jackson Books in New York City. She was formerly with River Run Books in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And Jody Poloni, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. See you in the bookstore.
All right. Jody Poloni, writer. She lives in Marlborough, Vermont. She reviews fiction for New Pages and Contrary Magazine and works at the family-owned Everyone's Books in Brattleboro, Vermont. We will have a full list of all of their overlooked books. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. Stay with us.